HarperCollins presents The Young Alexander by Alex Rosen. Read by Gavin Osborne. Prologue. On the 8th of November 1977, the Greek feast day of the archangels Michael and Gabriel, the keystone of the tomb was finally raised and the burial chamber inhaled its first fresh air in over two millennia. The dig team gathered expectantly around the opening, as Manolis Andronicus, the archaeologist in charge of the Vergina excavations in northern Greece, carefully bent down and put his head into the small rectangular hole, the dark interior still heavy with the smell of stagnant time. His first observations were not what he had been expecting. His torch beam illuminated a pair of coarsely worked marble doors. The surrounding walls were undecorated and even lacked the finishing coat of white stucco that was common in other tombs. Considering the massive earthen mound that had concealed the structure, along with an exquisite painted mural found adorning its facade, the plain interior was a bitter disappointment. "I felt lost," he later wrote in his memoir. Things only got worse as he noticed that the floor in front of the doors was also bare. He momentarily lifted his head from the opening. His usual calm demeanour vanished, anxiety etched across his face. "It's empty," he said. No one dared say anything. The tomb's exterior had shown no sign of forced entry, indicating that it was another sad victim of ancient tomb robbers. How could it be empty? Unable to believe his own words, Andronicus plunged his head back inside for another look. This time, he leant further into the space and aimed his torch directly downwards. And what he saw made him want to shout for joy. For the benefit of his colleagues, he began to describe the scene, listing each wonderful item in turn in his slow, authoritative voice. Immediately down from the opening, very close to the wall, there is a small marble sarcophagus. On my right, I see many bronze vessels, one bronze shield, a pair of greaves, and other bronze and iron things. On the left, there are silver vessels. On the floor, I see residues of organic objects. I assume that they may be rotten wood. In the background, I see the backside of an internal marble door. In the centre of the room, on my right, there is a rather strange cuirass. The walls have no decoration. When he finally stood up, his face was serious, but, as one on-site archaeologist records, also lit by an imperceptible ecstasy. The tomb was intact. Andronicus had finally come face to face with what he later called the living truth of the past. The contents of the tomb, its location in ancient Aigai, the ancestral centre of ancient Macedonia or Macedon, and the burial place of its kings, combined with other historical and archaeological research, allowed Andronicus to suggest that it belonged to none other than Philip II. This was a Tutankhamun moment. The study of Macedonia would never be quite the same again. But while Howard Carter had discovered the remains of a fairly insignificant boy king, Andronicus claimed to have found the final resting place of one of the most famous leaders in the classical world. The man who had transformed the weak and fragile kingdom into the dominant power in the Aegean. It was one of the greatest archaeological finds of the 20th century. As the team set about meticulously recording the tomb and its artifacts, Andronicus's eyes settled on an assortment of miniature ivory body parts hiding among a spray of decomposing organic material. They belonged to figurines that had once adorned the facade of an elaborate wooden dining couch. Their tiny faces, around an inch high, were intricately carved, and the first one he picked up was that of a middle-aged man with prominent nose and trimmed beard. The portrait was similar to the depiction of Philip on a gold medallion from Tarsus. Andronicus believed that he held in his hands the image of the tomb's original occupant.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?